from the number one sports site in the world. Yahoo! This is Yahoo Sports Radio. YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
The ball, Yelovich, is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Mocco. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's Friday! It's a landslide!
Joe Mocco and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in!
Right now.
Incredibly, within seconds.
From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Mocco.
Greetings, soccer fans. This is episode number, six already of the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Mocco, editor of the FC Yahoo blog. With me here in the Playa Vista podcast room is Shahan Ahmed.
Hello.
Joey Galino.
Great to be back.
Alex Baker.
Hi, everybody.
And all the way from New York, Leander Scharlakens.
I'm playing hurt with a sore throat today, so I'm expecting double credit.
Oh, look at you, playing hurt. We are taping on Thursday, the day of big Europa League's round of 16, second legs. We're taping just not even an hour after Liverpool advanced to the last eight with a 1-1 second leg draw at Man United. That's a 3-1 aggregate win. Anthony Martial gave United some hope with a first-half penalty, but then Philippe Coutinho really made, well, I wouldn't blame David De Gea all that much, but his exquisite chip, his cheeky chip over De Gea really clinched things, and that was really it for the Red Devils. Guys, let's start off with talking about Coutinho's goal. Was it a great goal, or was it just horrible defending by Varela?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. It had to be. Varela should have been there. He just completely let him go, you know, to the goal line. And you know what? Coutinho did incredibly well in there, and he kind of had the beating of Varela for most of the night. Coutinho looked pretty good for, I think, the majority of that match. But when you really, when you break it down, it showed why Manchester United are where they are. They're playing Varela at right back to go up against Liverpool's arguably their best player. And it showed tonight. And immediately after halftime, Louis van Gaal pulls him and puts Antonio Valencia back in, who hasn't played in 5 months, which just reminds you how many injuries Manchester United have had this year. It really is staggering. I think, you know, I was talking to Joey earlier before we started, and we were trying to figure out who the top goal scorer for United is. And I'm pretty sure we didn't actually get around to checking this yet. I'm thinking Joey's checking right now. But it's still Wayne Rooney, and he's had a dreadful start to the season, had a little bit of a hot spurt, and then he's been out injured. And he's still their best goal scorer. That kind of tells you that the squad, you know, they've really been on the fringes all season long, and it really showed on that Varela goal because Varela got completely exposed for being a guy that frankly should not have been playing.
Yeah, it is actually Wayne Rooney. He's still got 14, and Martial has 12. And going back to the Coutinho goal, it was one of those goals where as soon as it happened, you know, you understood the basics of it. You saw that he made that run down the left side of the box and that he chipped De Gea. But it was one of those goals where I was really looking forward to the replay because you just wanted to see, you know, what his touch was and how he angled his body and all the particulars of it. And it was just such a brilliant bit of skill. And, you know, it really kind of sapped a little bit of the luster from the second half. I mean, not if you're a Liverpool fan, obviously, then you're thrilled. But, you know, in that second half, I think we were all thinking, kind of to Shahan's point, you know, United doesn't have two or three goals in them. You know, they maybe have another, but, you know, that wouldn't have been enough to advance in the tie, or at least force extra time, or whatever the case may be. And it's just kind of indicative of, like, where they are this season. And, you know, it's frankly, a little bit shocking. And, You know, obviously, if you're Liverpool, you're thrilled because this is the first meeting between the two in Europe, which we've talked about before. This is the first time United's ever lost to English opposition in Europe, so that's a feather in your cap. And that, you know, as much as it augments Liverpool and boosts what they're doing, it's kind of like, okay, if you're on the flip side of that, if you're United, you have to be shrugging and saying, what the heck's going on?
I thought the Coutinho goal reminded me most of the old Allen Iverson crossover. And then the little teardrop shot at the end. I thought it was so perfect. But it did kind of kill off the game in the sense that at that point, United needed three goals. You know, for a team that's as offensively challenged as this one, that was just never going to happen. So it was beautiful. And at the same time, it sort of ruined the rest of the game. So you kind of got the remainder of your entertainment value in that one little run.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. It was a beautiful goal from Coutinho. Well taken, beautiful control. Would he have scored it against a better team? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he wouldn't have been allowed to make that run as he did. But that shouldn't detract from it. It was a beautiful goal.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to say that he could have beaten a better keeper with the way that De Gea is playing this year. So that part of it was great. But, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, it's certainly indicative of, you know, a better defender or a more organized defense, you know, probably would have made a difference there. But I also think it's a little bit indicative of, you know, last week we talked about how United came to Anfield and kind of set up to they didn't play with much life. Their setup was a little, you know, curious and it didn't seem like they were really chasing it. Liverpool, I mean, I know they made the change where Milner was playing in the defense, but they really went to Old Trafford, it seemed like, to get a result. And Coutinho, all day, was indicative of that, no more so, or never more so, than on that goal.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I do want to add is that United actually played pretty well. They were not boring for a change. It was actually an exciting game, especially the first half. I know the second half, you know, some of the air went out because of the Coutinho goal. But United did come out attacking. There were periods after that first goal, they looked like they were going to get a second goal. They nearly did. Fellaini wasn't a disaster this time around. He actually played pretty well. There were a few times where he gave the ball away cheaply. But really, when you thought it, everything on the balance of it, really they were lacking was in front of goal. They were able to have pretty good possession. They were able to actually create chances. They just weren't able to finish them. And obviously, they were a little bit exposed at the back. And, you know, that's going to happen when you're going for goals. And, you know, Liverpool also blew a bunch of chances, and they could have scored a few more, too. You know, Coutinho had this great run, and he does this little flick. But earlier in the game, there was one point where I forget who it was who went up the right side, found him middle of the box, completely unmarked, and he has a heavy touch, and the ball gets taken away. Whereas if he doesn't have a heavy touch, he's in the center of the box with an open shot. He can hit it right corner, left corner, wherever, and it's an easy goal. So United were pretty open for a majority of the match, but it was an exciting tie. They did play pretty well. They created chances. This wasn't what, you know, mundane United has looked like for the majority of the season.
Let me just say something. Martial's penalty was just masterfully taken. It was never in doubt. And it's nice to see the confidence coming out of him. I think he's definitely maybe still one for the future, but I don't know. Just got to call it out where I see it. That was a great penalty.
Yeah, just to add on top of that, the build-up to earning that penalty was actually really good play by United as well. So, you know, it kind of hinted at the fact that, you know, you could say that this team, you know, Louis van Gaal hasn't worked out, but the players are still playing. They're still trying out there. They might not have the quality, but they haven't quite given up on the manager, so to speak.
For the record, I'm going to go down and say that was a great goal. It was horrible defending. Great goal against the exceptional keeper. It takes great skill to beat a keeper like that. Guys, so Liverpool moves on to the last eight. But, you know, Man United, this is just the latest of disappointing results for Louis van Gaal's Man United. I'm going to tease Leander Charlakens' recap in the FC Yahoo blog. He poses this topic, this question. Which club would you rather be? Would you rather be Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool right now or Louis van Gaal's Man United?
I think it's clear that at this particular moment in time, you would rather be Liverpool, because just look at what's going on. Liverpool is in transition, And but they have Jurgen Klopp, who's an established manager. They can, you know, buy the players that they need in the summer. They're still alive in the Europa League. They may end up winning it and get to the Champions League. It doesn't look like they're going to get a top four spot this year, but, you know, there's a direction, and there's kind of a plan in place. And United, as we've been talking about, is a little more discordant. I think that them exiting this competition now, and if they lose the Manchester Derby this weekend, they'll be even further back from a top four spot. So they have no way back into the Champions League, basically, if that happens. And it's going to be a tough sell. We talked a little bit about this with Chelsea the last time out. You know, it's going to be a tough sell to not have that Champions League soccer to offer to teams. And, you know, I think this obviously means Van Gaal is gone, and they're going to bring in someone, whether it be Mourinho, whoever it is. There are options out there for them to rectify all this, but it's a much clearer path for Liverpool to do it. You know, it's much clearer for them heading into next season, not only to get into the Champions League potentially for the remainder of this season, but also just going forward.
So I'll agree with you in that Liverpool is a better spot going forward, and I'll say tomorrow Liverpool is better off. Today, I mean, if Manchester United goes and wins the Manchester Derby, they're 1 point off of top four. They have a clear sight to finishing and getting a Champions League spot. Liverpool, okay, they have an extra game in hand, so they're kind of in that same balance, and they actually, surprisingly, have a good shot at it as well. But, you know, with Europa League especially, that seems to be their clearer view to make it into the Champions League next season, more so than even United. And Liverpool has to do a lot more overhauling, I think, in terms of bringing in players. Whereas United, yes, some of the quality is lacking, but it's because it's youth. They have talent, it just hasn't fully developed yet. When you look at all their frontline players, they're all kids. And it's not that, you know, when you look at Martial, when you look at, you know, even Memphis or Lingard, you look at all these guys and you're saying they have talent. They're good players. They just haven't quite developed and grown into what they're going to become. So whereas Liverpool, you look at them and you say, you know, Sturridge is an injury case. Coutinho's probably one of the only guys where you can really get behind and say, this guy you want around. Everything else, Klopp is pretty much going to have to go out and buy and bring in a whole new team. Now, from a managerial standpoint, it's not even a question. I think, you know, Klopp's in place. You have a clear sight of a manager who's actually going to be around for years to come.
I was going to make that same point, because I think you also need to take the bigger picture here. United definitely has more talent. It starts with kids like Martial and Rashford, who came out of nowhere. But, you know, Klopp needs to rebuild this team. This is the Liverpool team is very much in transition. You know, guys are playing for their places for next season, and Klopp is still trying to figure out, who do I want to keep? You know, a guy like Coutinho, definitely you want to keep. But, you know, how many other guys on that roster right now could you say Klopp is going to keep? There's no one on the back line I can't say he's going to keep. I mean, you know, the keeper who's been held for so long for unknown reasons has to be gone. So if you look at from that perspective, there is talent at United. There is hope. It's just you need someone to shape it and coax the talent out of that.
I think that, you know, if given the choice between having Klopp or having a half dozen promising young players, I would probably go with Klopp, because there are maybe a half dozen sort of elite managers out there who can take a team that's close, put it together, and turn them into champions. But there are way fewer managers who have a track record of really building something at a big club, and who can turn sort of that putty of raw talent and turn it into a team. And I agree that Liverpool has less talent right now, probably than Manchester United does, even though the goalkeeper you're alluding to, Simon Mignolet, just renewed his contract unimaginably. But, you know, in soccer, more than ever, talent is for sale. And there's such a scarcity of good managers, and especially Kloppian managers who can build something from the ground up and who have that skill set to turn Liverpool around. I think they're actually at a better starting point, even if they have some catching up to do in terms of personnel, because of that. You know, he's never really been in charge. He wasn't in charge at Borussia Dortmund in doing the recruitment, but I think he'll have a heavy hand in it. Clearly, he's very good at getting the most out of young players. And you could see that at Dortmund when guys like Shinji Kagawa or Nuri Sahin would leave and would sort of flounder elsewhere. He gets the most out of talent, and I think that he maybe doesn't need as much talent as a consequence to work with as some other managers might. So, you know, given the choice, I would go with him. I think having him as the manager, and he's not some kind of silver bullet that's going to solve all their problems overnight, but I think he gives them a better chance than United's very lush crop of young talent admittedly does.
I have to agree. I think that United's got some good players coming through. But I feel like with Klopp in place, Liverpool are definitely in a position to build something. Whereas at United, you've got Van Gaal, whose future is up for grabs, basically. Is Mourinho going to come in? Is it going to be a new manager? We don't really know. So I feel like Liverpool is definitely in a position where they are getting things in place to grow a project. United, I just don't know what the future is going to bring for them.
And getting back to that, I mean, you have a guy like Mourinho. Is he going to build a team from the ground up? No. He's going to spend, you know, he's going to go do whatever, get a left back and get a central midfielder and get another striker, and he's going to try to win right away. And I think it's that sort of Band-Aid approach at Manchester United that just hasn't worked. I mean, when Sir Alex Ferguson left, he you know, he's given a lot of credit for winning the title easily with that team, but he left behind a very old team. And they were sort of due for a rebuild from that moment on, or at least a very sort of aggressive phasing out. And that never happened. And they just kept slapping on Band-Aids, and they kept just throwing money at it, and it doesn't work anymore because the Premier League is so competitive now. There are so many teams that are positioned every single year to compete that they kind of need to just clear that plot of land that house is built on and kind of start over. And I don't see who else in the market as a manager is able to do that right now. I don't think Mourinho is the answer. So again, that brings me back to Klopp.
I think, Lanier, you wrote about this before the season started, that this is an unprecedented era for Manchester United from the standpoint of, you know, what Sir Alex built over the course of two-plus decades there, and, you know, that class of 92, and then the second wave of stars, the Rooneys, the Ronaldos, you know. You don't see teams in this big money game now that, you know, kind of was ushered in a little bit by Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. You don't see teams that really do that much anymore. And so United, since then, I think, you know, the rebuild is correct. Like, they were due for a rebuild. The only problem is these fans who are used to seeing this great attacking flair and the success, I don't know if it would have been a tough sell. Like, you it would have been tough to go out and say, we might not be very good for a couple of years, but let's have these, you know, younger players develop. And I agree that you're not going to get that with Mourinho. If you bring him in, yes, the attacking flair will be back. Excuse me, the drama will be back, all that stuff. But in terms of long-term success, you know, how is this really the best way to go? And if you're Manchester United, that's a tough question that you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, the funny thing is that if Mourinho comes back, the one player that's almost sure to be gone is Juan Mata, who's probably the only developed player they have. Yeah. So that's just want to throw that in there real quick.
I don't know if Mourinho's the guy to bring back attacking flair either. I don't see him bringing that back.
Well,
I see him bringing back success.
He'll do it in the first half of the season. Then when he has to hunker down over the winter, right, and he's like, you know, boring Man United and all that.
Right.
Guys, let's move on to the Champions League. We're down to the last eight. We are recording the day before the draw, so we don't know the matchups yet, but we can review the round of 16. The most entertaining game of this week's second legs by far was Bayern Munich against Juventus at the Allianz Arena. Bayern was down 2-0 at halftime, shockingly. Juve got first half goals from Paul Pogba and Juan Cuadrado. And then Pep Guardiola and his guys figured it out. They fought back, forced extra time, got a header from Robert Lewandowski in the 73rd minute, and then Thomas Müller 1 minute after the 90 to force extra time. And then they got goals from Thiago and Kingsley Coman in the second extra time to secure the 4-2 second leg win, 6-4 on aggregate. Guys, should we be encouraged by Bayern's fight back or be discouraged by the fact that they blew a 2 away goals lead at home?
Well, I don't think either, to be honest with you, because, okay, defensively they're not as stout as you would have expected. or some people would have expected, though they've had so many injuries back there. Batstuber's out, Boateng's out. You know, their center of defense doesn't really exist. Alaba's been kind of filling into that role for a good amount of the season now. And he had probably his worst game as a Bayern Munich player, you could argue, yesterday. But I think you have to look at the opponent. And Juventus is not some slouch opponent that was, you know, that barely made it into the Champions League. These are the Italian champions who went to the Champions League final. Granted, they had some major turnover with Arturo Vidal, Tevez, Pirlo, all moving on. But they still had immense amount of talent. You saw it with Morata, who had that incredible run before he laid it off to Juan Cuadrado, who did not mess up the chance and actually did a great fake out. Probably one of the best goals of the Champions League if Luis Suarez hadn't scored his. So I think that you have to look at the opposition and take note of the fact that, hey, this team, if they had lost that tie, obviously it's an it's a complete collapse. Pep Guardiola, you know, shows up in England with his head down. But the fact that they came back and then what they did in the extra time showed you that this team has, you know, fortitude that actually is underlined by the fact that Pep told his guys, supposedly according to Thomas Muller, that he would castrate them and going into the extra time if they did not win the game.
How's that for motivation?
I do agree that it's not black and white. It's a little more gray in terms of the original question, but it's a little discouraging for me that Bayern Munich, that this tie careened so violently between, you know, them going up with the two goals in the first leg and then Juve pulling a couple back and then them going ahead too, and then Bayern having to score, you know, all those goals to force extra time and then put it to bed eventually. Because for me, it's not necessarily a new thing with this particular Bayern Munich squad. And what I mean by that is they've had some slip-ups recently in the league where they've lost or they haven't won, and they just haven't had that. You know, the team that won the Champions League in 2013, the year before Pep Guardiola got there, had such fight and such hunger, and they really didn't let teams get back up off the mat when they got down. And then you saw that in the final against Borussia Dortmund. I'm not saying that they hammered them, but you know, they really fought and fought and fought for that goal until Robin scored it late. And that fight with this team kind of shows up when it needs to. But is that really what you want out of a team with this much talent?
That Bayern Munich team back then was one of the healthier teams, I'll say, and they had continuity. You looked at yesterday's game, you know, Arjen Robben's not there, and that was, you know, Ribery's, you know, barely coming back, and it frankly took him the duration of that game to get his legs and actually start having something happen and start creating again. So I think there was a lot going on in terms of Bayern adjusting to what they had to do, and with Pep on the sidelines, they were able to problem solve in the moment. And that's what, you know, champions do. And obviously, it's the Champions League, and there's champions all around. They're facing a champion. But I think the fact that they made it out past the round, that's all that really matters. Now, you know, Boateng, I think, is in contention to potentially return. You know, depends who they end up drawing, but he's supposed to be back this season. That would help defensively immensely, because that is definitely a point of concern.
Let me just say that the whole Champions League this season, Juventus have given up 5 goals prior to yesterday. So I think any time you score 4 goals in a game against a team like that, it's a success. So I'd say good on Bayern.
I think that's fair, and I think you can kind of tell how Bayern now is kind of stuck between generations, kind of like United was at one point, like we were talking about before, where, you know, Robin and Ribery clearly now are being usurped by Douglas Costa and Kingsley Coman, and you've got, you know, Schweinsteiger is gone, you've got Müller is the guy now with Lewandowski. You're seeing turnover there, and you've got a manager who's outgoing, and I think this is sort of the last breaths, however powerful, of sort of one cycle of that team that's now sort of going to be probably changed quite dramatically under Carlo Ancelotti next season, not necessarily just in terms of personnel, but I'm guessing in the playing style as well. And so in that regard, you've got a team that's maybe a little bit confused. So maybe it isn't super surprising to see that, you know, they can go up 2-0 and totally dominate and then give up 4 unanswered goals to Juventus and then get 2 more and then get another 2. I mean, it seems like they're kind of in that kind of weird space right now where that sort of thing is bound to happen. But they're clearly still a contender.
I think Pep Guardiola gets a lot of flack. You know, some people, the people that maybe don't think he's as great as he's been made out to be, will say, well, anybody could win and do what he's done with the players that he had at Barcelona and now Bayern Munich. And while we all know that's not true, there wasn't necessarily any major tactical change or anything like that, you know, other than bringing certain players on that really led to this. I think Bayern Munich, for one of the few times under a Pep Guardiola coach team, Bayern Munich, the players really just, you know, they carried him. And this was, you know, a subject in FC Yahoo this week, that Guardiola's legacy at Bayern Munich was very much on the line. And his players, whether they were responding to him, threatening to castrate him or not, kind of bailed him out on this one.
Guys, let's continue this review of the Champions League round of 16 by choosing the best or worst teams that you guys saw. Who really impressed you guys this round?
Does Barcelona get to play in this game or not?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, if it becomes... I mean, it's obvious, but I mean, we can still sing Barca's praise.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I think we can probably all go around and say Barcelona is still the best team in Europe. I can't really say that I would drop them in the rankings.
Yeah, let's eliminate Barcelona. Who else other than Barcelona impressed you guys?
Okay, I'm going to say this, and this is more based on the first leg than what we saw a couple days ago. But if you look at Manchester City and the position that they were in, they have a favorable draw against Dynamo Kiev. They've never been, you know, they'd never advanced past the round of 16 in the history of the Champions League. This was their moment. We all thought they were going to win, but when you don't have a history of success at this kind of level, it still takes something, still takes some gumption, whatever you want to call it, to go on the road and score those 3 away goals and basically put the whole thing to bed before you go back. So I was, you know, obviously they weren't in Barcelona's class, but I thought, you know, City did their work, and I was a little impressed by that, I have to say.
I thought Paris Saint-Germain was looking really sharp. I believe this is the 4th season in a row that they're in the quarterfinals. I'm not entirely sure, and certainly Chelsea isn't last year's Chelsea, whom they beat in the round of 16. But that team, and Leonardo kind of spilled the beans on this a few years ago when he was the technical director, even though he wasn't supposed to say that. That team is built to win in Europe, and that shows. You know, they've got incredible depth. They've totally run away with the French league, which means they can sort of rest guys and rotate guys. And that team is just really, really sharp. So I'm thinking they're a pretty good pick to get past the quarterfinals this year because they're looking really solid.
Yeah, Leander just kind of beat me to the punch on PSG, but I will say that over 2 legs against Chelsea, they looked pretty comfortable. They looked like they had another gear to go to, and they didn't need to go to it. But since Leander beat me to the punch, I'll throw an honorable mention to Juventus, who did take Bayern, you know, down to the wire to an extent, and a lot of people just thought Bayern were going to roll over them easily, and that certainly didn't happen.
Yeah, so I agree with Leander, actually, the PSG, and then I was actually going to go with Juve, but I want to kind of harp on that point a little bit. And, you know, Max Allegri's gotten pretty killed for his substitutions, for them not working out correctly, but I think he actually deserves a ton of credit for, you know, when Juve was down 2-0, to come back and make it 2-2 in that first leg, and then to actually go up 2-0 in Munich, which no one really expected to happen. You know, as much as he's getting faulted for those substitutions, you know, Sudaro was the substitution that got them the tying goal in the first leg. So I think a lot of it, you know, also circling back to what we said earlier, I actually think that Max Allegri would be a perfect person to go into Manchester United rather than Mourinho, because I think that he, you know, he's shown the ability to adapt to different types of systems, different types of clubs. He won the Serie A with AC Milan, then went over to Juve and almost did the treble there in his first season. You know, he's got them back rebounded again this year with a whole different look to a squad than last year. So, you know, from a technical standpoint, I think he's actually a really good fit. He's pretty young guy overall. So, you know, I just wanted to throw a shout out there for him.
I'm going to jump in with and change the topic with my biggest disappointment of this round. I'm going to go with Atletico Madrid, specifically their attack. I mean, this team just can't score. They played 210 minutes of scoreless soccer. They needed 8 straight spot kicks in a penalty shootout on their home turf. to get past PSV. Now, PSV, no slight on your Dutch league, Leander. They are the leader of the Eredivisie. And they also have only conceded, well, the second fewest goals in the Dutch league behind your Ajax with 18. But, you know, even with a defense like Atletico's, which they do have the best defense in La Liga, Diego Simeone has to find a way to get goals from this team. And it's you know, they brought in Jackson in the offseason, but now it's really fallen on Antoine Griezmann. He's the only one who's in the top 10 for them for top scorers in La Liga, and I just don't know where the goals are going to come from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Saul has actually been playing pretty well for them, and he was involved in a lot of the build-ups where Griezmann was scoring recently. And Griezmann had some chances. He just didn't put them away in the Champions League. I think it's really telling when you bring in Fernando Torres to come and save the day, and that's the best option
you
have. You know, they have Carrasco. He hasn't quite hit full stride either. One thing I also wanted to add was this was the first time in the history of the Champions League where I believe at this stage two teams played both legs 0-0 and played extra time 0-0 before going to the penalty kicks. That had never happened before.
That's just fantastic soccer.
210 minutes of scoreless soccer.
I just want to add in here that PSV is leading the Dutch league because they haven't yet played Ajax, and they will on Sunday.
There you go. Ajax shout out.
Whereupon the lead change will flip to Ajax.
Real quick, I want to throw some shade, if I can, at the Zenit St. Pete. Their habit of giving up late goals, because they gave up the late one in the first leg against Benfica. They gave Benfica a chance to win. That won the game. And then the second leg, they scored. Hulk scored in the 69th minute. And then they gave up two goals in the last 10 minutes, the 85th minute that put it away with the away goal. So, you know, they're not a bad defensive team. I think they're like fifth, sixth, something like that in the Russian league in terms of goals allowed. But under AVB, you wouldn't necessarily expect that to be the case. But, you know, them not being able to protect their leads or protect their net late really cost them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that it's due to the winter break. I mean, if you haven't played for months and you come in, it's like, yes, they couldn't hold up for the full 90 minutes each time. Shocking, I know. It's a complete disadvantage, and that's why when we were doing this beforehand, I picked Benfica over Zenit and said completely, I think Zenit's a better team. The winter break completely handicaps them. I didn't take them for that one reason.
If I could give my biggest disappointment of the round would have to be English clubs across the board. With the exception of City, who, let's face it, just sort of slouched across the line. They didn't come running across the line in flying colors. That was a dreadful game the other day. Chelsea, completely dominated by Paris Saint-Germain. Arsenal, basically blown out of the water. And English teams might have lost a coefficient place had Bayern not come back against Juventus yesterday. So there's my disappointment.
That's a really important point Alex is touching on there. And this kind of slipped under the radar, but if Bayern hadn't come back and Juve had gone far in the tournament, it would have been very possible that Serie A would have taken a guaranteed Champions League spot away from the Premier League. And, you know, for all this talk about the Premier League, and, you know, and you have the sort of reverse narrative about the Italian league right now, that it's sort of falling apart and it's been in this downward spiral, which I think they've actually already reversed. You know, the English league for all the plaudits it gets was very close to slipping down another peg in Europe there. So I think that was pretty significant. And there, I was looking at an article about how it's looking next year for the UEFA coefficient. And because it's a 5-year cycle, the English clubs have quite a lot to do in Europe next year if they're going to avoid losing a spot then.
Guys, let's take a time out. After the break, we'll preview the weekend's key matches, including a big contest in the Premier League, the Manchester Derby on Sunday. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, we go from fat Scott to skinny. Did you see Barry Bonds as hitting coach for the Miami Marlins.
I did not see him standing up. I did see him at a podium addressing the press.
Then here, take a gape at this picture right here. You're looking great, Barry. I mean, it looks like you're not on steroids anymore.
My. He looks like a slender old man.
Look at that guy.
That's impressive.
The incredible rise and fall, the inflation and deflation of one Barry Bonds. Look at his head.
You look like a normal size human, Mr. Bonds.
You look normal again.
You know what? Maybe now you can fit into the Hall of Fame one day.
Steve Zabin, mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio. Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show, yahoosportsradio.com. It's time to get back to everything, football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. The FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Lago.
Welcome back to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Lago with the Fab Four. That would be Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, Joey Galino, and Leander Charlakins. Guys, as part of our review of the Champions League round of 16, we were going to talk about who was the best player of the round of 16. And seems like the consensus is it was a certain aging striker in Paris, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Shahan, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, the future West Ham striker, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. All right, that might not. I think it's been pretty clear that he's not going to go to West Ham. But he is leaving PSG, and his quote, I think, last week summed up everything, which was, maybe if they build a statue of me to replace the Eiffel Tower, I will stay at PSG. Actually, I think he said, I will promise to stay at PSG.
That's why I wanted to give him player of the round, personally, yes. Just that quote alone.
Oh, I mean, that's he's as long as he's in the competition will never fail. That's I think that's a fact. No, he was tremendous. I mean, you know, two goals and an assist, and meaningful goal and meaningful assist in that second leg especially. He came up big. When the pressure was on, all the stick he gets, especially from the English media or the British media, however you want to phrase that, and he turned up, actually did, you know, he made up for the fact that he kind of got that BS red card last year, I think I'll call it that, and, you know, this year he didn't get suckered into any of those situations. He played really, really intelligent football, had really, you know, played good team football, wasn't selfish, didn't look like he was out there. He had a lot, you know, without him, they may not advance without him, frankly. He was the best player for PSG, and, you know, he won that tie.
Yeah, I agree with Shahan there. I think that, you know, Zlatan gets a lot of shtick from the English media, and I think he answered the question, could he play in the Premier League by putting on a dominating performance over two legs and dominating the Premier League champions? And obviously it's not the Chelsea that won the Premier League last season, but this is an improving Chelsea and a pretty good team. And he really did pick PSG up on his back and carry them into the next round.
This is a pet peeve of mine, and it annoys me to no end. This notion that Zlatan somehow couldn't play in the Premier League. I mean, he went from Malmo to Ajax, and then he played for Juventus, Inter Milan, Barcelona, AC Milan, and now PSG off the top of my head. I mean, this guy won like 8 or 9 league titles. I mean, yeah, he hasn't done as well in the Champions League. But, I mean, it's just ridiculous, this idea that he somehow wouldn't be just as good in the Premier League. And I think it speaks to me to the real blind spot in the English soccer press that somehow if it isn't English, it isn't good and it isn't worthy, which is kind of funny when you look at the state of the game today.
Come on, could Zlatan really hang on a cold, rainy night and smoke?
No, but he could do it at Stamford Bridge. I think.
Ouch. Touché.
Oh, he did not.
Wow.
Because they don't have cold, rainy nights in Holland or Italy or Spain or France or, you know.
That's a fact. I've checked that.
The guys from Sweden, they do cold and rain over there.
Was there anyone else that stood out? You can throw in Barcelona players too if you want.
I mean, I wasn't necessarily going to do that because they're the sum of their parts, and Now I'll punch my own point in the face by basically saying that Atletico Madrid defense, good for them. We've talked about it. They're very, very good, and we didn't really expect Eindhoven to score, and boy, oh boy, did they need them not to score, because they were less than impressive in advancing to the final eight. But, you know, the guys back there, Diego Godin, Juan Fran, all them, they did the job.
Yeah, just quick shout for Barcelona. Now, you know, all three of them scored, the front three. They're at 106 goals now, which is well ahead of where they were last year, and they broke the record last year. So this looks like they're going to break the, you know, front three record for, in terms of combined goals, for the second year running. And so, yes, this is the most prolific attack in the history of the game.
All right, enough Champions League review. Let's look ahead to the weekend, and specifically the Premier League. We go into the weekend with Leicester on top, having 63 points, 5-point lead on second place Tottenham, and it's really a two-team race for the title. But the Manchester Derby on Sunday, there is plenty to play for, namely a Champions League spot. City is in fourth at 51 points, and Man United is four behind at 47, and West Ham's in fifth at 49. Guys, what is the big talking point? How are you looking at this Manchester Derby that's kind of lost some of its luster with these teams struggling?
Well, I mean, it's top four is the talking point this weekend, and it is for, you know, I think it's Man City, West Ham, Man United, and frankly even Arsenal. But, you know, I think those three teams, Man City, West Ham, and Man United, are the main ones that you look at. And, you know, we were joking about Zlatan at West Ham. Well, West Ham is actually going to Stamford Bridge this weekend. And if they win and City don't win, they'll be level on points. So if City draw and West Ham win, they'll be level on points for fourth place. If City lose and West Ham win, West Ham go above City and take sole possession of fourth place, with Man U only 1 point back. So top four is really coming down the wire there. And, you know, it's one of those things where West Ham's been playing really well. I think they're the form team in the Premier League right now. I think they've won three in a row, I want to say. It might even be, yeah, I think it's three in a row. You know, Mikel Antonio, I want to give him a shout-out because he's been playing tremendously well. Payet just got a call-up to France, a return call-up to France. You know, they've been a solid team. They have some defensive issues right now just with injuries. But I think you have to pay attention to West Ham right now because they very well could be in the top four. And then you look up there and you're like, wait, Leicester City, Tottenham, and West Ham could be three of the four representatives for the Premier League. And, you know, Man City, we joked about them potentially falling out of the Champions League and Pep coming over and taking over Europa League squad. It's a reality right now. It's very possibly could happen. And Man United, frankly, you know, when we were talking earlier about it, I alluded to it. They could overtake Man City, and the momentum could start right here. And with Vincent Kompany going down again with injury, Man City is by no means in a good spot. Even Otamendi went down, so they're starting Di Michaelis and Mangala, which has not been a good combination for them this year. You know, David Silva hasn't looked right. Aguero comes and goes. At home, they've been better than on the road. So, you know, this is a good game for Man City to kind of regain their footing a little bit because they are at home. But if Man United plays with the kind of zest and flair they played with this time, like tonight, and they're playing against that defense, expect some goals.
I think there's, yeah, the remedy for Manchester United's relatively toothless attack might be a Manchester City defense that's not really in a good place at the moment. And as you said, the Kompany injury doesn't help things at all. I think this is personally, I'm not saying that if Manchester City lose this game, that it wouldn't be a huge talking point and wouldn't be a bad thing. But if even if they lose, let's say the worst case scenario, and United goes in there, leaves with all 3 points, West Ham wins at Chelsea this weekend, which under Goose Hiddink, that's not really, you know, as easy as it was in the fall. Like, that's going to be a tough game for them. But let's say that United and West Ham both win. Well, you know, that City is still a point ahead of Manchester United. They're still only 1 point behind West Ham. And while I agree that those two teams are very much in the thick of it, especially West Ham, to get to these Champions League spots. I think this is a lot more about Manchester United. I think the fans, especially, if they lose, if they get knocked out of European competition by Liverpool one day, and then 3 days later they get defeated by the noisy neighbors again, which is, I think over the past 5 years, they've only beaten them twice in the league. So it's been, you know, a very, the blue half of Manchester has been a lot happier recently. It's not going to go over well. So I think that this is going to say a lot more about Manchester United. And if they lose, you know, you can't necessarily count them out of the race for the Champions League spots, but it really puts more of a dent in their pursuit than it would to City.
I mean, I'm just looking at United's upcoming matches, and it seems like United definitely, well, they need something out of this game, because after Man City, they're at home to Everton, and then they go to White Hart Lane against Tottenham. Before taking on last place Aston Villa and Crystal Palace. So it seems if there's any urgency, it's not just because they're sixth in the table, it's because the fixtures don't really favor them. They really can't afford to drop points anymore.
Yeah, they haven't done themselves any favors to this point. But, you know, you look at Everton, and Everton's about as inconsistent a side as that as exists in the Premier League currently. So you don't count those points, but them winning that game is definitely not beyond the realm of possibility. If they win this game, you know, Aston Villa is a League Two side at this point. It's not even, you know, like, if you don't beat Villa, you really, really messed up. Then Van Gaal probably should be fired. Might not want to wait till the end of the season if that happens. But, yeah, I mean, they have, you know, they do have some tricky fixtures left, but hey, at this point, there's no such thing as an easy game, and we've seen that all season long. There's no points you can really take for granted, unless you're Leicester, apparently. Leicester, speaking of which, this weekend, you know, they go to Crystal Palace, who haven't won this year. They're the only team that have not won in 2016. However, Palace did play pretty well last weekend. They ended up not winning again. And Leicester didn't play that well last weekend, save for, you know, the Okazaki bicycle kick. So that one could be a little bit of a tricky fixture. And, you know, Tottenham could gain three valuable points there, or two valuable points. Either way, it's a five-point gap that could be shortened this weekend.
I think the most interesting wrinkle here is what happens if Liverpool wins the Europa League and then takes the Champions League spot. It takes the fourth Champions League spot. West Ham comes third behind Spurs and Leicester. Now your Champions League teams are Spurs, Leicester, West Ham, and Liverpool, while Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, and Arsenal are all shut out of the Champions League. I think that would make for a really fun season next year.
Just one quick point, and when we were talking about this last week, I should have mentioned it or thought about this. You can have five Champions League teams if you win the Europa League, which we saw with Spain this year. So technically, it wouldn't necessarily knock them out.
Well, here's my double wrinkle. What if City win the Champions League and Liverpool win the Europa League? Then what? Neither of them finish in the top four. What would happen then?
That's a good question.
Well, then you take the top three, and you would take the winner of the Europa, and you take the City, and then the fourth and the fifth team would end up in the Europa League, unless it's West Ham that wins the FA Cup, and then they get the. It gets complicated, all right? Yeah. Let's just say,
saw that last year too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's basically European spots would be more and more limited based on how many teams end up winning in Europe in the Europa League, mm-hmm. and in the Champions League, but yeah, I mean. If you're Arsenal, you kind of have to be sweating a little bit.
We're going to do a podcast here in a couple of weeks, just breaking down all the scenarios for European spots. I can just see it in my mind. I do not have a wrinkle, unfortunately. I just would like to go back to what Shahan was saying about Leicester being at Crystal Palace this weekend and expand upon that point. This really is one of the teams to keep an eye on is Tottenham, because they're at home against Bournemouth. And no disrespect to Bournemouth, but that is a fixture you do expect Tottenham to win. But look around the rest of the top four. Arsenal is at Everton. Very tricky game. Leicester City is at Crystal Palace. Yes, Palace hasn't won, but Leicester did look a little shaky, as you mentioned this past week. West Ham is at Chelsea, which we already talked about. We have the Manchester Derby. And Liverpool is at Southampton. So a lot of the teams that are chasing Champions League spots, top four spots, you know, just that are in the upper half of the league table, have tricky away fixtures this weekend. Tottenham, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but, you know, they can sit at home, they can get their 3 points on Sunday, and then they can look and see if there's, you know, any fallout from the rest of these games. and it's going to be a really big weekend in terms of movement in the table, I think, with the way these fixtures are set up.
Yeah, and going back to, you know, Arsenal being at Everton, which is a tough fixture, especially considering what Everton did to Chelsea, sorry, Joe, in the FA Cup, and Lukaku, the way that he looked. You know, I was calling for it, for Ozil and Sanchez not to even make the trip. They ended up playing against Barcelona in a meaningless tie, and now 3 days later, they're at Goodison Park, where there's a little bit of confidence in that squad to go out and potentially get a result, and not just get a result, get a big scalp. I mean, Arsenal's still a big scalp. And, you know, I really think that if Arsenal doesn't get a result at Everton this weekend, that pressure that's already boiling under Arsene Wenger, I mean, I don't see how it tones down in any capacity. I mean, there will be riots outside the Emirates. Just if there aren't already, they're going to be even. There's going to be more uproar than we've ever seen, really.
Well, let's put it to our resident Gunner supporters here. I mean, Arsenal's in a precarious position, 1 point above fourth place City. I mean, are you guys starting to sweat, or how are you guys feeling about Arsenal's chances of securing a Champions League spot?
Well, it's the age-old question is kind of, would you rather have the game in hand or would you rather have the points? And obviously you'd rather have the points already secured. The game in hand does, you know, Arsenal could be as much as, I think, four up on City if that is a win. But, you know, there's no guarantee of that at this point. So, yeah, there is a little bit of sweating going on. And I think that this week, in particular, of all the jaw-dropping setbacks that Arsenal has had over the past 10 years or so, if Wenger does, in fact, step down, which we think is the only really the way that he's going to leave, is probably on his own accord, unless something, you know, unless missing the Champions League really means that much and really causes that kind of inquest to the board and all that, you know, this week when you lose the winnable FA Cup fixture, which, you know, has been basically the Band-Aid over the flesh wound the past couple of years, winning those two trophies that kind of bought him more time, then you, as Shahan said, you kind of mismanage your players in a relatively unwinnable trip to the new camp, and then you come out on Saturday and drop points to Everton, and all of a sudden you might be out of the Champions League if the points break a certain way this weekend. This could be the defining week for Arsene Wenger being out, potentially. I don't think, even if he wins on Saturday, it won't be a defining week in terms of him staying around, but this could be something that we point back to at the end of the season and say, this is where the trouble really started and the walls, you know, John Cross of the Daily Mirror was tweeting this weekend how this feels different. This is not, you know, the past few years where you figure Wenger could stay because of the FA Cup wins and, you know, just things like that. This feels like the walls are closing in on him a little bit, and I do think this is going to be a very crucial week in that regard.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I think that we've come to a head with Wenger before like this, and then it just sort of stays the same. But I think that Arsenal probably will finish in the top four one way or another. I'd almost like to see them not, just to see what would happen. Like, would he get fired? Would there be a change then? But I think one thing the man can do is steer that team into a top four finish, and I think he will do that.
That's the signature trophy of the Arsene Wenger era now, is the top four finish.
All right, guys, before we get out of here, I want you to give me one game that you guys are intrigued by that you're going to watch. We'll just go quickly around. Joey, why don't you start us off?
I'm very much intrigued by the Tyne Wear Derby. It's going to be between Newcastle and Sunderland. It's usually one of the most intense atmospheres anyway, and the fact that they're both locked in a relegation battle makes it that much more important. Honorable mention to Borussia Mönchengladbach, who I believe is playing Schalke this weekend, and it's they're in the 4-5 spots, so there's some Champions League intrigue in the Bundesliga as well.
Jahan?
I'll go next. Yeah, I'm going to Vegas for a bachelor party this weekend, so there will be
cards on the table, yeah. Literally and figuratively.
There'll be some gambling going on.
How are you
going
to watch any games? You're going to be early in the morning.
Yeah, my eyes will be red, but it's going to be one of those situations where I will be watching lots of games at the sportsbook. And so the ones that I've kind of picked out are, first of all, Leicester away at Crystal Palace. They're, even though I said it's kind of a tricky fixture, they're getting better than even odds, and you got to take better than even odds when you're talking about the best team in the Premier League. Then, you know, Arsenal and Everton, I think you Everton to win that is actually not a bad bet because they're actually not favored, shockingly.
Wow.
And then, you know, the one that Joe's not going to enjoy is West Ham is 4-1 to win at Chelsea. Ooh. But I think I'm probably going to end up taking the draw plus West Ham, because as good as Chelsea has been under Hiddink, there are a lot of draws in there sprinkled in, and against teams that you wouldn't expect draws against. And West Ham's actually been really good lately, and I like where they're headed as opposed to where Chelsea is, because what is Chelsea playing for at this point? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I cannot disagree. look, I'm gonna be watching on Saturday night the California Clasico, baby. LA Galaxy against the San Jose Earthquakes at the StubHub Center. Alex, I know you're gonna be watching.
Yep. Exciting game. San Jose Earthquakes, 2 games, 2 wins. LA Galaxy, nice win the first week. Then they gave up a late goal against Colorado.
Awful.
So I'm looking for them to bounce back this week with a statement win.
That was sorry, go ahead.
If anybody's still listening, I'll be watching PSV Ajax, which I think will be the title decider in the Dutch league. PSV has 66 points. Ajax has 65. There's 7 games left. Everybody else is at least 19 points back. That's the game that's going to, I think, sway this title race. And I think, interestingly, it might decide if Frank de Boer sticks around as Ajax manager a little bit longer. And if he doesn't, if they don't win and he leaves, I think that would be a really, really interesting appointment for an awful lot of clubs, especially in the Premier League, that are kind of looking to rebuild.
I think that's a first. We've actually spent a minute talking about the Dutch league.
The Eredivisie? Yeah. 1 minute too long. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Wow. We drove away our last remaining list.
Yeah. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to also Real Madrid. Sevilla is this weekend. It's at the Bernabeu, but still, that's actually a tough match. So should be interesting to watch. And Villarreal Barcelona also going on. That's actually at Villarreal, so that should also be kind of an interesting game in La Liga.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. We're getting the wrap-up signal from our producer, Alex. Alex, thank you, as always. be sure to subscribe to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast on iTunes, and you can find all of our insights on Yahoo Sports in the FC Yahoo blog. For Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, Joey Galino, Leander Charlakins, I'm Joe Lago. You've been listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Bye for now.